Steve, thanks a lot. It's Bill F. and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy today. Wendy's on vacation all this week. We're joined in studio right now by Kristen McQuarrie. Kristen is a member of the Tribune's editorial board, and there's a whole lot of news stories to cover. So, Kristen, thanks very much for being here.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind, I want to start out by talking to you about Spike Lee's movie Chi-Raq. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the movie. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the title. Everything having to do with this movie is making people angry. You just wrote about it recently. Let's start out with the title. People are so upset about the title for obvious reasons. It makes our city look like a war zone, but let's be honest, it has been a war zone.
It is. I mean, it's kind of an accurate depiction of the city. I hate to break it to the mayor.
We've
editorialized in favor of allowing, you know, we have a First Amendment speech rights here. Yes, you might think it's offensive, but it is kind of in some ways an accurate depiction of the city. And you know, we have supported Spike Lee's right to name his movie what he wishes.
Right.
And I think so the premiere was last night, and I think the what will be interesting to me, I do want to see it. This is almost like a musical. Have you read about it?
Yeah, a little bit.
So, you know, we're leaving this in Spike Lee's hands, and Jennifer Hudson plays one of the lead roles. Jennifer Hudson, in her own personal life, as you'll remember, lost her mother and her nephew to gun violence. So you almost have to trust that someone in that type of position would never take lightly death and violence that we are experiencing in the city. But I can't get my head around how you can have like a musical element to something so haunting.
What is it? You said it's almost like a musical. And what does that mean? It's almost like a musical.
There are, it's based on a Greek play. And so there are parts where there are song and dance numbers. And really it's about this, this woman who tries to recruit people to go on a sex strike and withhold sex until their male partners, you know, stop the gang banging. And there was actually a real movement by one person to do that in Chicago.
Oh.
I'm count me out.
Right.
But
that's fair. All right, I'm writing your name down. Kristen is out on this. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But it seems very similar to maybe an iambic pentameter type flow to it, where it's a freestyle rap rhythm type. I haven't seen it, but I'm hearing mixed reviews on kind of the theme throughout.
And if it just works, like, does this work? I think when he first said he was going to do this movie and he testified about it a little bit before city council, I was imagining a documentary, you know, a very grainy, raw type of presentation. And so then as we learned more about it, I can't figure out how this is going to work, how this is not going to minimize, you know, actual, you know, violence.
The one quote I heard from a protester, and I think I heard it during Steve Cochran's show, was that the name Chi-Raq was actually something that the gangbangers themselves had started calling the area. And that's why they didn't like the glorification of it and the fact that they used it as the movie, because it almost took and validated what they were saying, that they had created a war zone in their own neighborhoods.
Right. I mean, Chi-Raq is a word, I believe it was part of the urban, it was welcomed into the urban dictionary a few years ago. So it is a term that is widely used now in rap songs, not just people who live in Chicago. But when you look at our shooting statistics and our homicide rates, it's tough to argue that in certain parts of the city that they're not living a war zone lifestyle.
Right. Realistically, Kristen, no matter what they call this movie and no matter what the subject matter of the movie is, it's not going to change what's going on in and around the city from a violence standpoint, is it? There's no gang member who says, wow, that title of that movie really hit home. I think I better play nice from now on. That's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. But from the people who were involved in the project, and you had like Father Flager, who has tried to make a difference. I mean, he has stabilized a very violent part of the west side of Chicago through his religious outpouring. And I mean, I don't want to say that it will have no effect, but if we all had an answer to what would end all the violence, we wouldn't be sitting here. I mean, I don't blame them for trying.
Sure.
I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah. There's a phone call we want to take. Mark knows a little bit about this. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us. What's up?
Hi. You know, people are kind of minimizing the whole thing with the sex strike, but it actually is based in reality. In Liberia years ago, the women went on a sex strike, and it actually ended a 14-year civil war.
Really?
Thousands and thousands of people were dying, and the women all got together from both sides of the civil war and decided that's how they were going to handle it.
I had not heard
so
that.
It's actually based on a real thing.
Interesting. Well, thanks. Mark, do you have any intention at all of seeing this movie, Chirac?
Yeah, I will. Absolutely.
You want to see it? Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Mark. Have a good week. All right. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We have many other topics to cover with Kristen McQuarrie. If you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. More after this. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley on WGN. Kristen McQuarrie is here, a member of the Tribune's editorial board. We're talking about many things Chicago related. This one more on a national scale, if you wouldn't mind, Kristen. Donald Trump, still among the leaders on the Republican side for president. He had an interesting little sequence of events happen with a rally protester the other day.
It's been a rough 96 hours for Donald Trump. I mean, and he is actually, you know, now leading, I think, by double digits in the polls. But his anti-Muslim rhetoric has sort of ratcheted up. He'd had a tweet over the weekend where, which was actually inaccurate, but he tried to list out, like, black-on-black crime, 96%, and it came from, like, a neo-Nazi website. And then he tried to defend it. It was actually wrong. He has talked about registering Muslims, making them register, making them wear badges. He talked about surveillance, that he would not be opposed to surveilling mosques. This is the leading candidate on the Republican ticket for president.
Right.
And so even though there is, I understand the fear, we wrote on the editorial board, we didn't see there being a problem with just touching the pause button and making sure when we are accepting refugees that we have a vetting process that's in place, not encamping them, not rounding them up, but just tapping the pause button, I think is reasonable. But Trump is just, he takes things too far, and it concerns me that he continues to lead in the polls.
So what, one of the things that they've suggested with the refugees is that if they're of Christian faith, that they have an easier process of getting in and remaining in the United States, where if they're Muslim, that would be a stumbling block to their acceptance. Is that correct?
They've talked about, I mean, if you look at how we vet them currently, and this goes for all refugees, it's a long process.
Yeah.
It takes years for especially Syrian, but even Iraqi refugees to be, you know, be able to come into this country. And so I think another thing that Trump has suggested is that if you're Christian, then you wouldn't have to go through all of these, jump through all these hoops. And some of the other candidates have said that too. Again, you know, once we start targeting religious groups in this country, I think we're really violating our own morals and principles, and not to mention our Constitution.
It would be utterly impossible under this dictate for somebody who was of Muslim faith to write the word Christian on a form, even if they weren't. There's no way in the world they could fudge their way through that, right?
They couldn't possibly.
There's no way.
And our federal government is really on top of things,
right,
Bill, so that would...
Johnny
right.
on the spot.
Just want to make sure.
Well, and that, this is only covering those that enter the country legally, would be going through this process. So we do have, as candidates have essentially described it, as squishy borders, where, I mean, they can come in through a variety of different ways illegally.
That is true. The biggest, I think, I just saw this from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so I think it's pretty accurate. The biggest influx of illegal immigration, though, are Asians. So, I mean, I just think we have to be really careful when we start going down this path of letting fear make us do things as a country that are morally, you know, completely opposite of what we are founded on and our principles.
Do you think that with what happened in France a week ago Friday, do you think that automatically, because of those events, of what happened there, that becomes one of the major focuses, if not the major focus, of the upcoming campaign? Everybody now needs to think about, and sadly, the thoughts of protecting our country went away a little bit because it's been so many years since September 11th. But now all of a sudden, with what happened so recently in France, that's going to become a major issue, isn't it? It can't not be.
It did automatically. I mean, as soon as that happened, and I am not a fan of Ann Coulter, the ultra-right conservative radical, but she tweeted something immediately that said, Trump just won the nomination because he's been the most strident. And so, yeah, it completely changed the conversation and will continue to do so. The next debate, I'm sure, will be very different and probably centered on foreign policy and immigration and all these issues.
So if it's not Trump who benefits from this, who does get points and loses points because terrorism moves to the forefront again? Who do you think gains and loses?
The people who gain are the people who've been most vocal about it. So that would be the Trump, Ted Cruz, to some extent Marco Rubio, yeah. Although he's a little bit softer. I mean, even somebody like Mike Huckabee, who's kind of in the background, has been, you know, really harsh on the issue. It hurts people, unfortunately, like Jeb Bush, who has more of a centrist immigration position,
yeah.
Or John Kasich, governor of Ohio. John Kasich is actually starting a super PAC now to try to take down Trump.
Oh, is he?
So I'm interested to see how that inter-party play will happen if you have someone within the Republican Party finally trying to, you know, rein him in a little bit with money and advertising.
Yep.
The story we've been talking about or hearing a lot about this past weekend are the fact that you can be on a government no-fly list because you're on the terror watch list, but you're still legally allowed to buy a gun.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. And our gun laws, I was a proponent of concealed carry, but I think the NRA and some of those groups are radical in what they will not allow. And I go back to the Sandy Hook when you had the slaughtering of 20 first graders and you had the parents of those kids sitting in the Senate gallery hoping to get one piece of legislation passed that was just going to do federal background checks.
Mm-hmm.
And they could not get it passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't pass sensible gun law that law abiding gun owners support, there's really no hope. For me, that was sort of the case closing.
Yeah, what's it going to take?
Right.
And so you can't get in an airplane, but you can buy a gun legally here in the United States. And we know you can buy it illegally.
I'm sure it varies state to state, and that's the problem. We don't have a federal background check system. So I'm sure there are federally licensed, responsible gun shops that probably have access to that or would have grounds to reject you. But it's state to state. That's the problem. Everybody has their own rules on who you can sell guns to.
It's not fair to bring this up because we only have a couple of minutes, but the story is worthy of it, so I will bring it up. There's only a couple minutes left, Kristen, but let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Teachers Union's downtown rally that's coming up. What do we need to know about this?
So they're rallying today. They are, I don't think the teachers quite understand what the word bankruptcy means.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a school system that is about to go belly up. In fact, we have Forrest Claypool, the new CEO, coming to talk to the editorial board momentarily to give us an update. They want a bailout from Springfield. But the teachers are talking about striking again. Last time they struck, they got 17.6% raises over a 3 or 4 year contract. They still have taxpayers picking up almost all their pension costs. And so I think at some point the teachers need to realize you have to give a little bit more, and mm-hmm. you're going to have to pay a little bit more to your pension. Other teachers pay 9% into their own retirement accounts. Chicago public school teachers have only been paying 2%. And so that's the sticking point. That's what Forrest Claypool is trying to get them to do, is to phase in gradually picking up more of their own pension costs.
I know that money issues take place in all 50 states and all around the world, but it seems for some reason, like in Chicago and in the state of Illinois, we seem to have more of a crunch. What are we doing wrong here in the city and in the state that other places do a little bit better than us?
I think it's one party rule. And I don't want to just blame it on the Democrats. If we had the Republicans who ran everything here, we would probably have a different set of problems. But when you have such resistance to any different train of thought, and we just keep reelecting people who think the same way, we have a totally democratically controlled city and state. And so there's no pushback. It's just a crowding out of other opinions.
But if you look at what's gone on nationally on a higher level, not just budgetary, but otherwise, people always point at the fact that it's the Republicans and the Democrats constantly in gridlock. But you're saying almost the opposite here, huh?
They're both problematic.
Yeah.
But I just think we are uniquely situated where we've had total Democratic control in the city forever. And in the state since from 2002 until Governor Rauner was elected.
Yeah.
So that's a long time. And sorry, but the state was badly mismanaged during that time.
It seems.
As was the Chicago public school system, if we go looking through recent CEOs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would be standing on the line probably with CTU if I had to deal with the bureaucratic mess that is CPS.
How about that? Kristen, thanks. Appreciate you being here. It's Kristen McQuarrie. Read her in your Chicago Tribune. We'll be back after this. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley on WGN.